This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. It is time now for Africa Update. This week, a South African appeals court rules the corruption case against African National Congress leader Jacob Zuma can move forward. Plus, shock at the jail term given to 9 Senegalese gay men. And Africans await Barack Obama's inauguration with mixed expectations. For more, we've got Amira Woods. She is co-director of Foreign Policy in Focus at the Institute for Policy Studies. Hey, Amira.
How you doing, Farai?
I'm doing great. So,
awesome.
Yesterday, a South African court cleared the way for corruption and racketeering charges to be filed against presidential hopeful Jacob Zuma. A lower court dismissed the case against the African National Congress leader on a technicality last September and claims that there was political interference by President Thabo Mbeki, led President Mbeki to step down. Now, where does this ruling, this new ruling, bring us, Amira?
Total chaos, Farai. Clearly, there's so much going on behind the scenes on this issue. Zuma's trial was on again, off again. Now it's on again. Will he be put forward on corruption charges, and what will be the political implications? Clearly, he is head of the largest political party, the African National Congress, the oldest party on the continent. But the ANC now is going through real pressures. The split between Mbeki, the ouster of Mbeki, the former president of South Africa, has now led to a split within the African National Congress. So this issue of Zuma and whether or not he's brought up on charges has led to real changes in the political landscape in South Africa. And as we move towards elections in the coming months, it could be April when there are presidential elections in South Africa. It is going to be interesting times to see, will this trial go forward? Will it be completed and there'll be a ruling before elections? And what would the implications of a possible ANC not led by Zuma mean for South African politics now and into the future?
As you know, we've talked about this new political party, COPE, and you've got the ANC, you've got COPE, you have questions over the economic direction of South Africa and whether or not it's inclusive enough, particularly in light of the 2010 World Cup, and whether or not there's going to be tension and protest by people who've been shut out of the economic growth. Do you see any real discussion that is forward thinking about how are you going to take people who have actually lost ground economically post-apartheid and lift them up?
That is the critical question. Many see that the trade union movement was the voice of the people for decades in South Africa. And yet, with the economic strife that many are facing, remember, there's a global economic crisis, and South Africa is not left out of that situation. And you have real dire straits for people who had such high expectations, particularly after the end of apartheid, expectations that there will be housing, there will be jobs, you know. And these expectations have gone unmet for many people throughout South Africa, for the masses and the majority. So the key question is, as we see this new political party emerging really to the right of the African National Congress, this COPE, the Congress of the People, to what extent will the pressures from the bottom up create new political forces in South Africa, potentially new parties to emerge on the left of the African National Congress? To what extent do all of these fissures really change the landscape so that you not only have political parties emerging, but a real challenge in terms of what will be the future direction of South Africa? Can there be an economy that works for people, for the miners, for the you know, farmers, for the those who are the majority, the workers of that country?
I want to move on to an issue of rights. At West Africa, there were 9 gay men in Senegal sentenced to 8 years in jail for, quote, indecent conduct and unnatural acts. According to the BBC, the men belong to a group helping to fight HIV and AIDS in the country. Senegal is predominantly Muslim. Homosexuality is illegal. Nonetheless, I think a lot of people were shocked by this ruling. What are we to make of it?
It is a travesty. It is absolutely a disaster when it comes to human rights to see this type of a ruling against really people who were fighting not only for the right to health, but really the right for dignity for all people. And it's not just Senegal. You see, you know, clearly Zimbabwe with Mugabe and his outbursts on homosexuality, but also you have comments coming very much from the president of Uganda. It is in a range of countries, really, where this type of homophobia has risen. But the good news, really, Farai, is that there are human rights activists across the continent that recognize that you cannot talk about social justice and leave out people who really have a right to express their sexual orientation. So this is a relatively new arena in the human rights agenda on the African continent and really around the world. But it's an agenda that we all must figure out ways to uphold so that we can arrive really at a 21st century world where all can live with dignity.
When you think about the trends on the continent that you see around gay and lesbian rights, is there anything we can point to? I mean, in South Africa, gays and lesbians can get married, which is more than you can say in most parts of the United States. But it's not is there a movement on the continent or?
Well, I do think there is the beginnings of a movement. Clearly, South Africa is one of the best. With the Constitution of 94, you had really enshrined in the Constitution rights for women, rights for people of all sexual orientation. You see such forward-looking advances in terms of social justice in that Constitution. And I think some of the other newer constitutions, Namibia, Mozambique, you know, this is, again, with a continent of, you know, 54 countries, if you count the Western Sahara, it is very rich in nuances. And I do think that you have some that are able to take the lead and create a sense of hope for others in the continent who also recognize the importance of this issue. So clearly, the South African human rights activists, but there are activists in Nigeria, in Uganda, in a number of countries around the continent that are creating a platform to raise these critical issues.
All right. Well, let's take a last stop on the politics train of Barack Obama. His Kenyan grandmother is on her way with a ceremonial spear for him. And someone said, you better bring that spear because he's going to need it the next 4 years. And
coming from Washington, I think that's absolutely right.
Exactly. For better, for worse, what are expectations that people from African nations, ones living in African nations or in the West, are bringing to this inauguration?
Well, I will start with the sense of joy, excitement, and pure shock that the president of the United States will be someone of African origin, someone who's not only visited and spent time in Africa, but also lived in Indonesia and really is knowledgeable about the world. And I think there's a sense that it's not only a changed face in the White House, but an orientation that will help to change U.S. foreign policy and U.S. leadership in the world. I think there is, you know, there's also the I guess it's the foot on the ground, right? With all this celebration up in the air, the foot on the ground is basically saying, well, there are entrenched forces. There is an establishment that has built up a U.S. foreign policy and a U.S.-Africa engagement that has not worked for the interests of the African continent, that has created really an opportunity to militarize U.S. engagement in Africa with a newly established Africa Command, that has created an opportunity for exploitation of Africa's resources, especially its oil, but many other resources, and really that Africans in communities around the continent have paid the price. So I think there's a sense that there's high joy and expectation and excitement, but the realists really recognize that we have to temper the excitement and make sure that people both in the United States with an interest in a more positive foreign policy, a more positive U.S. engagement, not just in Africa, but in all the world, that it is time for those forces to stay vigilant, to organize, and to make sure that we create a space where Obama is not only held accountable, but is able to get some real changes put forward so that we can have not just a 4-year, but potentially an 8-year Obama term.
Amira, thank you.
It's a pleasure. Thank you, Farai.
Amira Woods is co-director of Foreign Policy and Focus at the Institute for Policy Studies, and she was at our New York studios.